Well, good morning, TNC family, from my home to wherever you are on this third Sunday in September. Let's pray together as we begin. And I want to pray the prayer of the psalmist from Psalm chapter 62. I will wait patiently before God, for my victory comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress where I will never be shaken. So many enemies come against me, planning to topple me, delighting in telling lies about me, praising me to my face, but cursing me in their heart. And so with all that I am, I will wait quietly before God. My hope is in him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. My victory and honor come from him. He is my refuge, and I will trust in him at all times. I will pour out my heart to him and lean into his unfailing love. Amen. Well, we live in an angry world, don't we? I mean, write headlines over the bulk of the material you read on social media, and you'll find that one major headline, if you're being honest, will revolve around people's anger. Anger over perceived or real injustice. Anger over someone's greed or use of power. Anger over someone else's lifestyle or activities or beliefs. Anger. And it's not just on social media. Employees complain, get mad, and say nasty things about their employers. And employers get annoyed at employees and say mean things about them behind their backs. And if you were to put a decibel meter inside every home, you'd have way too many spikes. Wives yelling at husbands, and husbands yelling at wives, and parents yelling at kids, and kids yelling at parents. And domestic violence and gun violence are both huge problems across our nation, rooted in anger. And our court system is packed full of cases where anger has led to acts of injustice. And of course, all too real is how we've seen in recent times the anger of police towards civilians and civilians towards police, including the tragic events of January 6th. And of course, we just finished remembering 9/11 in this country. We live in an angry world. And sadly, it's nothing new. I remember in college, one day our history professor, I think it was Dr. Pettibone, my freshman year, he came to class and read the story of a brand new archaeological discovery where two hikers who were hiking in the Italian Alps and they stumbled across a dead body that upon examination by experts was discovered to have been the oldest preserved human being ever found, over 5,000 years old. And what made the discovery so remarkable was that unlike, say, Egyptian or Incan mummies that get shrunken and dehydrated by desert climates, this one was almost perfectly preserved because the glacier he died on froze his body. And what they found lodged in his back was an arrowhead. He had been shot in the back with an arrow. That's right, the oldest human corpse was not found resting in a peaceful grave, buried in grave clothes, surrounded by flowers and decorative wood, but instead sprawled out on a cold mountainside with an arrow in his back. And study world history, friends, and you will read far more pages about warriors than poets, about generals than artists, about anger than peace. And I'm just trying to remind you that we live in an angry world, but that's always been the case, including throughout the scriptures. Cain killed Abel. Jacob ran away from home because of his brother's anger. Joseph's brothers hated him so much they sold him into slavery. Moses' own people tried to kill him. King David's family was a mess of anger, including his father-in-law trying to kill him and his son Absalom trying to kill him. And in the New Testament, the Apostle Peter often lost his cool. And James and John, two of Jesus' closest friends, Mark tells us that they were called sons of thunder. And it wasn't because they worked for the Weather Channel. It was because they were quick to anger, including, for example, in Luke chapter 9, where some villagers don't want to provide accommodations for the disciples. And the text says, quote, "When the disciples, James and John, heard this, they asked, 'Lord, do you want us to call fire down from heaven and destroy them?'" That might be a slightly disproportionate response, James and John. But we've always lived in an angry world, and I'm not saying that in order to say, oh, well, who cares? Get used to it. Rather, and Jesus understood this, it means that we must continue to work toward changing this reality. Which is why I think in his most famous Sermon on the Mount, of all the topics Jesus can choose to address first, Jesus starts with how we diagnose and deal with anger. Because Jesus knows that at the root of so many other struggles in life is the problem of anger. And so Jesus says, Matthew chapter 5 in verse 21, "You have heard that it was said to people long ago, 'You shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment.'" And here Jesus is referring to Exodus and Deuteronomy, which says that at the level of murder, there will be a consequence, which is you can be punished yourself by the death penalty. But, Jesus goes on, "I'm telling you that anyone who is angry with his brother or sister," and that's a surprise addition in a male-dominated world where being angry at a woman wasn't considered a problem. But Jesus says, "I'm telling you that anyone who is even angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment." And here Jesus is just making the point that all levels of anger have consequences because they drive a wedge between two people, two groups, two parties. They isolate and complicate and separate and stereotype and lead to relationships without peace and safety where folks are walking on eggshells at best and at worst are feeling attacked and diminished and abused and beaten down. And Jesus goes on, verse 22, again, he says, "Anyone who says to a brother or sister, 'Raca,' is answerable to the Sanhedrin." Now, raca was an Aramaic term used to express contempt for someone you believed was less than you. In other words, sometimes we get angry at folks we believe are at least our equals, but raca is a way of being angry toward folks we deem as less than. Raca today would be like equivalent to using a racial slur about someone with a different skin color, or a degrading sexual reference about someone of another gender, or an offhanded remark about someone's intelligence based on their grammar or accent or the way they look. But Jesus doesn't stop there. Still verse 22, Jesus says, quote, "And anyone who says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of the fire of Gehenna." In the context of that Greek phrase, "you fool," more is the Greek word, is about condemning someone's soul out of anger. And that's the end of verse 22, but if you were to read these two verses, start to finish, without my commentary between, what you'd see is that in these two verses, Jesus is making a single diagnosis, which is anger at all levels is destructive to the good and strong life that God has in store for us. And you cannot walk around with anger and bitterness toward folks and simultaneously live in the flow of God's kingdom. This is why the Apostle Paul says in Colossians chapter 3, verse 8, rid yourselves of all such things as these, anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. And so, TNC, we should probably talk for a few minutes about anger. And I want to start by reminding you of what I hope you already know, which is this: anger is an emotion. And it's really important that we start here, because in the moment that you have anger, you don't view it as an emotion, you view it as a right, or a deep insight into reality and truth, or as a game plan, or a solution. But anger is not these things. I remember years ago, Pixar released that movie, Inside Out, the story of Riley Anderson, the 11-year-old girl who loves ice hockey, but is uprooted from her life in Minnesota and taken to San Francisco, where she experiences a ton of changes in her life. And inside of her are five big emotions: joy, sadness, fear, disgust, and anger. And what's inside comes outside. That's the movie's title. And Riley has all these emotions, and you get to see them in the movie. She has these emotions inside her head, and all these five emotions fight for control of her words and actions, including one time when she's just a toddler and her dad tells her, "No dessert for you after dinner unless you eat your vegetables." And this is what happens inside of her.
That's anger. He cares very deeply about things being fair.
So that's how you want to play it, old man? No dessert? Oh, sure. We'll eat our dinner right after you eat this.
Now, we might think that's a little overreaction to simply not getting dessert, but come on, friends. I've seen how folks treat servers at restaurants when they're refill doesn't come fast enough, or their French fries aren't hot enough. And I've witnessed gestures on the road when someone robs them of just like 10 seconds because they move in front of them on an exit ramp. And I've watched as folks throw their boss under the bus because the boss didn't get my vacation schedule right. And the truth is, adults do get angry over things as minor as dessert. And it's because anger isn't a rationally definable thing. It's an emotion, and emotions are deceiving. In fact, the prophet Jeremiah writes, chapter 17, quote, "The heart is deceitful above all things and above cure. Who can understand it?" And you understand, right? This is not a biological statement about the aorta and the atrium and the left and right ventricle. When Jeremiah says the heart is deceitful above all things, he's talking about your emotions. The heart as the seat of your emotions. And so your emotions are deceiving, which is why Solomon in Proverbs 14, verse 12, says something similar. Quote, "There is a way that seems right to a person, but in the end, it leads to death," because anger is deceiving. And so I want to make four very brief observations about it now, about how we deal with it. And then we'll close with a kind of special prayer. But here we go. Four strategies for dealing with anger. And here's number one. Number one, pause prayerfully. When you feel angry, first pause prayerfully. And I say pause because a couple minutes after something happens is probably not the time to post your opinion on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or text somebody. Have you ever heard somebody say, "I'm so angry, I can't even see straight"? Yep, that's right, you can't. And therefore, you cannot solve a situation that you don't see correctly, which is why prayer can help you see your situation from God's perspective. And part of what you might see in that prayerful pause is the difference between righteous anger and unrighteous anger. And what I mean here is, it's actually good to be angry in the face of injustice. In fact, if you aren't, then the sin of not being angry could be what you need to wrestle with. But here's what can happen in the middle of your prayerful pause. First, your blood pressure might drop a little and you'll get some perspective. Or second, you might be prompted to reach out to a wise friend instead of the person you're angry with. Or you might just in those quiet moments begin to understand why you are so angry. Because here's what you might need to realize. Anger always surfaces because what you want to happen isn't happening. Because something has not gone the way you think it should. And so your anger almost always sets yourself up as some ultimate source of what should happen. Some ultimate source of wisdom. Like, I know what's right. Not you. And so with anger, there's always this level of, you owe me. You owe me more respect. You owe me a greater effort. You owe me more patience. You owe me a raise. You owe me a promotion. You owe me affection. You owe me more time and attention. You owe me an apology. You owe me an opportunity. And so I'm angry because you took something from me that I deserved. Now think about that, because that means that a great reflective question when you get angry is, God, help me see what I perceive to have been taken from me. Because sometimes what you'll discover is your anger is just simply a sign of your own pride or your ignorance, because you're reacting to a set of beliefs that have yet to be vetted by wise friends or other sources. Or what you might discover is, hey, my anger is actually rooted in my fear, or my temptation is to say or do something that if I do it, it's not going to be helpful or uplifting or unifying, probably will make the situation worse. Or what you may discover is that my anger actually is godly. And so I need to think through what it means to have a healthy, constructive, and collaborative response. And I'm just saying all this can happen in the prayerful pause. So this week, before you decide to let anger move from the inside out, pause prayerfully. And number two, second, when you feel angry, reach out respectfully. And this is from Jesus' words in verse 23, where he says, quote, "If you are offering your gift at the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift." And TNC, if you'll reach out respectfully, seeking to be reconciled, what often happens is you meet the person and you start to see the situation at a deeper level. Because on the surface, I can get angry when I see a counter full of dirty dishes. But then beneath the surface, I begin to see a spouse who has worked hard to prepare some great food. And on the surface, I can get angry over a friend who is not listening to me. But beneath the surface, I'll begin to see a friend who's overwhelmed and trying their best to cope with an onslaught of their own responsibilities. And it's not personal at all. And on the surface, I can get angry over the pain that they are inflicting on me. But beneath the surface, I can begin to see, oh, they're just afraid or really lonely or confused. Which is why Jesus says, as far as possible, go to the person and say, will you help me see from your perspective? I just want to listen to you. And then maybe we can work together. Because it's never me versus you. Me versus my spouse. Me versus my kids. Me against my boss. It's not black versus white or black versus blue or citizens versus immigrants or Democrats versus Republicans. Friends, we will never end the cycle of anger with this kind of thinking. It's not us versus them, Jesus says. It's we. I'm saying read the scriptures. Pursuing peace, the peace of Christ, is not something confined to the private realm of individual emotions. And Christian culture is too comfortable claiming that the peace of Christ is all personal and individual while they wage war in anger and create division in the wider world. I'm saying we've made the peace of Christ a private affair while saying and doing things that lead to division and conflict in the wider world. But you just can't read the scriptures and make any credible case that the peace of Christ is primarily a private individual affair. Now, one caveat here, this does not mean you have to force reconciliation in a situation or become that person's best buddy or give up your unique opinions. Reconciliation is about more than agreeing with the other. It has more to do with staying in the room than with winning. With two sides coming together to discover a third way, seeing the world through the lens of we, not me. And so Jesus says, when you feel angry, reach out respectfully. And that leads to number three. First, pause prayerfully. Second, reach out respectfully. And third, settle matters swiftly. Verse 25, Jesus says, settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Settle quickly. In other words, don't hang out in the mediation room, the reconciliation room, for too long. And also don't hang out in the chat room or the Facebook room or the Twitter room. And don't try to bully the other person into submission. That's not going to settle matters swiftly. In fact, all that does is nurse your anger. Thomas Aquinas, some of you will know, in his great Summa Theologica, said that one of the major problems with anger is that we hold on to it for too long. And we don't just hold on to it, we nurse it, we rock it, we feed it. We write about it in our diaries, and then we reread our diaries. In other words, anger at first can be okay if it leads to prayer and understanding and finding a collaborative way forward. But the second you begin to feed it, to nurse it, then you should know that the problem is no longer the other person, it's you. When you neglect to settle matters swiftly, friends, what happens is you're nursing anger and it will function like a cancer for the folks in your circle, spreading tension and disunity and defensiveness and hurt. So what's a better response than anger? What's a better way to settle things swiftly? Well, check out this counsel from the scriptures. A gentle answer turns away wrath. Overlook an offense and win a friend. Love your enemies. Do good to them who hate you. Go the extra mile. All of these will help to settle matters swiftly. Which leads to the fourth bit of wisdom for dealing with anger. Number four, forgive freely. I love what Anne Lamott says, quote, not forgiving is like drinking rat poison and then waiting for the rat to die. And she goes on to say that one problem with not forgiving is what it does to me. Again, Thomas Aquinas, who identifies three problems in how we deal with anger in our culture. First, he says we get angry too easily. Second, we get more angry than the situation calls for, because usually there's something else going on that built to this anger and it's fueling the anger. And third, we forgive too slowly. We're not free forgivers. We don't forgive freely enough. I'll always remember Esau Macaulay's counsel in the book we read together last summer, Reading While Black, where he talks about the cross and the forgiveness that Jesus demonstrated there, and his notion that the cross doesn't just center my forgiveness from God to me. The cross centers forgiveness as an actual method for overcoming evil and breaking the cycle of anger and violence between human beings. Which I think is why Jesus didn't seem very interested in exposing sinners. He just seemed really interested in forgiving them. And so our challenge, our call, is to become forgivers who forgive freely. And so what I want to do now is I want to end with a prayer that I hope you'll pray for you as I pray it for me. So will you close your eyes now? And as your eyes are closed, will you remember that the Spirit of God is right here with you? And now, will you bring to mind that resentment or anger or frustration that you have with the other person or the other party or the other situation or the other organization? Bring to mind somebody who's hurt you. And I want to remind you of the loving and wise words of the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 12. He says, "Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." God, would you free me now from the poison of resentment? Would you give me the courage to do what is right and not nurse my anger? Will you give me the compassion of one who has been forgiven by Jesus at the cross, so that I can live free with hope and with grace and with joy? God, give me the wisdom to pause prayerfully and reach out respectfully and settle matters swiftly and forgive freely. Amen.